This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, it's been 2 weeks since we did this show. We had to take a break for various reasons, and now that I'm seeing you on camera, I have to ask you, is that a jack-in-the-box?
Yes, it is. I wish you hadn't seen me playing with my toys. It's so awkward. But I just, you know, I really like to make it go around and around and around, and then it always scares me when it pops up, and it's a little bit like Will Ferrell in Elf, you know, where he's testing all of the jack-in-the-boxes, and every time it pops out, you know, he gets angry because it scares him. But there's just something about that, you know. Yeah. No, Chris, I'm not playing with a jack-in-the-box.
Well, Matthew, that's not exactly the jack-in-the-box that I'm talking about there. I'm talking about more of the jack-in-the-box that we saw in Deep Space Nine when Vic's program got taken over by a holosuite malfunction. And I have to tell you, Matthew, something's going on at Vic's that
Man,
we don't know.
Man, it is bothering me, the fact that nobody invited me to Vic's. I was really discouraged. Everybody just walks by on the promenade and heads up to Vic's, and they're not like, "Hey, Matt, you want to come?" Nope, not, doesn't happen. So, whatevs.
Nope, they just walk. They don't just walk by you. They strut.
Yeah, there was music playing in the background. Where the heck was the music coming from? It was awesome.
That's what I wanted to know.
It was brassy and jazzy. Ugh. Nobody asked me to go to Vic's. I'm not talking about this anymore.
So, on the last Orb, we talked about the prophets and whether they're gods or aliens. And, you know, that was kind of a heavy topic. And we've done a lot of deep character analysis on this show. But this week, we're going to have a little bit of fun. And we're going to talk about bada bing, bada bang. And that scene that we're just talking about there, Matthew, when Sisko in the front and everyone's dressed up and they're strutting down the promenade in slow motion and the camera angle and all. One of the best scenes in Deep Space Nine, don't you think?
I really do. You know, watching it today, and I've seen it, I'm finishing up the end of season 7 finally, and on a rewatch that I had been on. And I got to this episode and I watched it the other day and I watched it today, and it's such a great episode, one, just because this is the last episode before you hit that big old war arc that's just going to finish off the series. This is the last time for these characters to just kind of breathe and have fun. And when they're all strutting their stuff in these great period costumes, you can tell that the actors are just having a good time. You know, that you know, they're not in the spacesuits. They're in tuxedos and dresses, cocktail dresses, all these kind of things. It just looks like they're having a great time. And my thought was, Chris, when they walk by Quark, what other show could do a heist show on a space station and it feel normal?
Right. You know, I was thinking that too at the beginning of the episode when Miles and Jules are sitting in Vic's and they're talking about their Alamo program. And of course, Vic's talking about the movie, The Alamo, and they're in the club and the music's playing and he gets up and sings. And then likewise at the end of the show, when Sisko's up there with Vic singing and they're all just sitting, having drinks and laughing. And I was thinking, you know, this is one thing I love about Deep Space Nine, is that the show, it's very Star Trek, but it has its own character, and they do these things with this show that you just can't imagine doing on any other show, and certainly not on any other Star Trek show.
No.
But it feels perfectly normal.
Well, and you mentioned, I mean, this isn't even in the lineup, but you mentioned, you know, them, you know, all sitting there, and they're watching Vic and Sisko sing at the end. And it's such a beautiful scene, Chris, because this is going to be the last time that this happens before What You Leave Behind. And that same exact scene basically happens, except Sisko isn't singing at that point. But what other captain was going to get up in front of their crew and sing and do it with such style? I mean, he just really gets into it. And you can tell Avery Brooks is having a fantastic time. And there's just something about that scene to me that just screams, this isn't just a crew. You know, this is really family. And these characters have come so far. I mean, one of the things that hit me, too, watching this episode, Chris, is that Kira, of all people on Deep Space Nine, for so many years, hated holosuites. Who's one of the first people to say that they're in to help Vic? A hologram. Kira, because she says, he's real to me. If without him, I wouldn't be with Odo. I mean, just, this is the kind of thing that I think we really wanted to start talking about, is what is it about Vic that the crew just loves so much? I mean, he is just a hologram, right?
Right. Yeah, he is, and that's what Worf says, too. They ask him, you know, don't you like Vic? And he says, well, you know, as a singer, I find him entertaining, but otherwise I don't like him or dislike him. He's a hologram, therefore he doesn't exist. But he definitely exists for everyone else on the crew, and the point about Kira is really good, that because of the role Vic played in bringing Kira and Odo together, you know, Vic, even though he is made of photons, he means something to her. You know, he had a major impact on her life. I think a major impact on helping her learn to be happy. And we don't necessarily see her being happy all the time. And as we move into the continuation of DS9 in the novels, in the same way, but during this time when she's with Odo, there's something that comes alive about Kira, and it's because of Vic that he helped bring them together, and Odo is what has pulled that out of Kira, I believe.
Yeah, and this is the question too, and, you know, is Vic, you know, in a lot of ways, like we do with the Doctor on Voyager, is Vic a real person? Like, is he a sentient being? And part of me, as you go on, really starts to think that this is not just a hologram. There's something special about Vic, and he is programmed to know who he is, that he is a hologram. He's also programmed to be able to accept the outside world. But in a lot of ways, he's very much like the Doctor at this point, too. I mean, he knows all about the Dominion War. You know, he's very knowledgeable, all of these things. The only thing that he doesn't do, it doesn't seem like, is necessarily learn in the same way, say, the Doctor does. And so that might be something that sets them apart. But there is something special about Vic that sets him apart from just, say, hey, we went to Fairhaven today and, you know, kissed a cow.
I think the Doctor is learning to be a person. And Vic is already a person, because he's this character in this scenario of 1962 Las Vegas, because Vic worries about things like paying his rent. You know, he worries about the show times. You know, he is living the life of the Rat Pack in the 60s in Las Vegas. So,
and yet at the same time, he knows that it's not necessarily real, but it's real to him. And so it's kind of, it's just for a computer program to be able to have all of that, like, kind of meta knowledge and live seemingly normally is in some ways something that would make you more than just a hologram, I think. And I think that that's just really neat. The Deep Space Nine, I think, did holograms the best. And the reason I'll say that is because it's never the program going crazy that all the other shows resort to. You know, Deep Space Nine actually uses its holograms and its holodeck programs, especially Vic, to really further its other characters and teach them something. And I think that's really, really cool. I don't really think we learn too much in, Tristan, in Fairhaven, or in Captain Proton, you know, those characters in there aren't teaching us anything. But Vic, on the other hand, really has something to teach us, even this 24th century crew. I always think it's funny that they go to him for advice, you know? Like, he lives in Vegas in 62, but he's got this wealth of knowledge about just life in general, and so...
Well, you have to think, I mean, someone who's singing in a club like that, you know, they're meeting all kinds of people all the time. They're interacting with lots of people who have different crises in their life and different reasons why they're there. And, you know, in a way, he's like a Guinan character. Guinan as a bartender, you know, you gain a lot of knowledge and a lot of real life information that way that you can then share with someone else. And, you know, a lot of times the counseling, and it's the reason why I think Guinan is the best counselor on the Enterprise, is it's about talking to the other person and helping them kind of see things on their own and work out the situation. And Vic's position in the club and interacting with the patrons gives him that ability. And plus, as a singer, you know, to be a great singer, you have to feel what you're singing about. You can't just sing the words. You have to talk from experience. And especially that kind of music, you know, that big band music has that in it, especially when it comes to relationships. And I think that also helps. And that's why the crew feels comfortable talking to him and why the introduction of Vic to Deep Space Nine was a great way for the writers to help their characters work through situations.
And the other thing that I really just like about Vic is that it's just so out of the blue the first time that it comes up on Deep Space Nine. And it's such a kind of a random thing, but it so fits the feel of this station and these people. And Vic seems to be the medicine that they need, especially in these last few seasons where things are getting heavier and heavier for them. This is a real place for them to be able to relax, to be able to escape to, and to be able to recharge and be encouraged by somebody like Vic. And man, I tell you what, of all the holodeck programs that I've seen in Star Trek, this is the one that I most want to go to because I just want to hang out with Vic. Because as Nog said, he's a friend. You know, he saved Nog's life when he thought it was over. You know, and yeah, this is a great, fantastic program. And really just goes to prove that if you want a holodeck program, you need it to have it be done by Felix. Because Felix also created Julian's spy program as well. So this is the...
Felix is the man.
He really is.
You know, I think there should be a whole series of novels about, you know, Felix, master holoprogram creator or something like that. It's just a whole series of... It's like a how-to series, perhaps, you know, for future...
How to create your own holodeck
holoprogram.
Yeah, this is good stuff. Yeah. I hope Pocket's listening.
It really is. Now, you mentioned Nog there. We talked about what Vic meant to Kira and Odo and their relationship. And, of course, we know how Miles and Jules, you know, interact with Vic. And of course, Vic was extremely important to Nog after he lost his leg and helping him, pull his life back together. And so for everyone, just to answer the question that we kind of started this part of the discussion with, for everyone, Vic has impacted their lives in a very meaningful way. And so for them, he's as much a member of the crew and as much a member of the family as anyone else is. And so when they find out that he's in trouble, they feel like they have to take care of the family. They have to help him out, even though he's just a hologram. And they could just turn off the program and all the problems would go away for them. And for Vic too, I guess. I mean, he would be off. But you know, they don't take that approach to it. They feel like, no, he's real. We have to help him. And before we get into the actual helping here, I did want to mention one thing, and this isn't really a big topic of discussion, but it just stuck out to me that at first when Sisko doesn't really understand why everyone is worried about Vic, and Bashir, Sisko walks into ops. It's kind of like, what's going on? And Bashir's like, Vic Fontaine's hotel has just been bought by gangsters. And I love the fact that in the middle of this war with the Dominion, that in the operations center of Deep Space Nine, someone can actually speak the line seriously, Vic Fontaine's hotel has just been bought by gangsters. And Sisko responds with, I see. When do you plan on going back to work? And then later, Cassidy is telling him about it at dinner. And she says, I guess this sounds pretty silly to you. And he says, a little. And Cassidy says, you have to understand, Vic isn't like another holodeck program. He's like a friend. And then we find out that Sisko's real problem isn't with Vic. It's with the fact that in 1962, in a club like that, Black people would not have been welcome in the club. And Sisko is very worked up and he's very indignant about racism in 1962. And I found that kind of odd in this story. Like, it was hard for me to buy in to Sisko's feelings, because in Far Beyond the Stars, we really addressed racism in a way that really, really worked for me, because it was through Benny Russell's eyes, and he was actually there in that time. But as a member of the Federation in the year 2375, as the Black captain of one of the most important outposts in the Alpha Quadrant, I find it hard that he would be so worked up about something that happened 300 years ago at this point, 400 years ago.
You know, I was thinking about that too, Chris, because it is a little bit strange. And then I remember the fact that he does remember his life as Benny Russell. He remembers what that experience was like. And so I kind of think that that's what it's affecting him still, that he wouldn't be this indignant if he hadn't just experienced a few seasons ago what it was like to live in this time period and have those kind of crushing memories. And we obviously remember it. You know, by the end of that episode, Benny is institutionalized because it's had such a toll on him. And so I really think that that's where this plays in. And I also
Well, that makes sense, yeah. And that's a really good point. But I didn't make the connection when I'm watching it. It just kind of happened.
Yeah,
that's where you're going?
And that's where I was with you. And then it kind of clicked. Oh wait, because then I was like, well, he really turns around quickly in this episode. And what Cassidy says to him was really fantastic. The fact that it's only the limitations now that we place on ourselves that get in the way. And I think this is where, again, you know, Sisko's able to put aside his experiences as Benny Russell and say, I'm putting a limitation on myself. And Sisko's also the kind of captain who actually enjoys sharing things with his crew, unlike some of the other captains. And I think he's realizing this is important to my crew. Look at where we are in this war. We need this. We need a diversion. We need something to bring us back together. I'm so thankful that that they didn't make this a huge issue in the episode, but they did bring it up. And what I like about them bringing it up as well is that Sisko also says we can't forget the truth about our past. And sitting side by side with them, what Cassidy tells him, both of those things hugely important, because you need to do both of them. You need to remember the past, and then you need to live in the freedom of the future. And that's a great message.
It really is. Yeah. I like that connection. I definitely like what Cassidy said. And as I felt that it was kind of odd for him to bring it up, and then I listened to what Cassidy said, thought, you know, that's great that is in here. And I'm glad, like you said, that they didn't make this a big issue. If the whole issue had been about, you know, racism in casinos in 1962, I think we would have maybe lost the charm of this episode a little bit. The way it was written, you know. I mean, of course you could do an episode about that, I guess, and it would work fine. But, well, let's get into the plan, because that's where, like, the fun is in this episode. And, you know, I thought about you when, of course, Ezri in a cocktail dress is coming up in the episode. But prior to that, I thought about you when I watched Ezri really perk up, and she, as a new member of the crew, I thought was really excited about the idea of robbing a casino. When they're having that meeting,
yeah,
and she says, like, I'm in, you know, she seemed to just really be excited by this prospect. And yeah, I was surprised by that.
It was something that it was funny in the episode, but it was interesting watching, and you got to see all those people there. And what's funny is that I don't really know how Cassidy has been affected by Vic, but everybody else in that room, I do, you know exactly how they've been affected by Vic. And for Ezri, she's seen just the value of Vic and what he's kind of taught her about herself, and, you know, somebody like Garrick or Nog, and the kind of the friendship she formed with him while going through that therapy with Nog and everything. But yeah, she's really all about robbing a bank. I think it's, she's got a little Duran coming out right there. A little bit of her, you know, former bad boy host, really ready to go.
Well, and you know, Jadzia would have been totally into this.
Yes, yes. And I think the way that...
Just for the fun factor.
Exactly. In fact, she would have dragged Worf with her too. Unfortunately, you know, Penumbra hasn't happened yet. And so, you know, they haven't kind of rekindled any romance just yet. So, yeah, this is a lot of fun. And you're right. Ezri in a cocktail dress is fantastic. There is not much better in this episode than Ezri in a cocktail dress.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Kira in her dresses. Kira's hairstyle.
Everything.
This episode actually was nominated for an Emmy for hairstyles, by the way. And Ezri's hair looks great, too.
Even Benjamin's hair is looking fantastic in this episode.
It is. Good hair there, Benji. But no, Nana Visitor in this episode, like this and our man Bashir, something about when they get her in dresses like that and they get her hair going, man.
Well, and she... just, there's something about Nana too when she does these episodes. She just sells those lines when she's speaking to those guys. She gets this sultry tone that she doesn't use with anybody else. All of the characters do such a fun job in this episode of kind of being, you know, somebody else. I love O'Brien just being the bumbling guy. Who? Me? Yeah. I've never seen her before in my life. And my favorite scene, I think, in the whole episode is when he comes back at the end and Bashir's like, where have you been? I don't want to talk about it. Just some really good stuff. So,
But I love how they're sitting in Vic's situation room, essentially, with the whiteboard, and they're diagramming their whole plan. And then you get to see them going through the plan as they're imagining it would be executed. And everything works so flawlessly in the plan. And one big contrast between this part of the episode and when they actually execute the plan is that Ezri is so, you know, flowing through with the drink, and she brings it in to the accountant. But then in the actual execution of the plan, she has trouble holding the tray steady as she walks with the drink, and things just don't quite go as they thought they would.
Well, it was awesome when she's talking to the, you know, they got Mike Starr to be in this episode, who's been in lots of things on TV. He's been in mob movies and all sorts of things, but you know, he gives her the job, and she tells him she's a fantastic waitress. And I'm thinking to myself, Ezri, when have you ever been a waitress ever? When have you ever carried anything on a tray? And then she is gingerly carrying that tray. She feels like about to tip over that martini when she brings it in there, and that's Bob O'Reilly, Gowron,
right?
Which is great too, to see him there without the makeup
as the replacement accountant.
Exactly.
When the regular accountant is gone, and then he's in there. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and then of course it is really cute. She's like, "Do you mind if I drink that? You know, just been on my feet all day, and I just need to pick me up." And he's like, he just drinks that drink right in front of her and puts it back down. And yeah, it's good stuff.
I think it would have been cool for continuity if, after this experience, if Ezri had delivered things around the station on a tray, holding it like a cocktail waitress. You know, like that she needs to take some pads or some other devices up to ops, for example, and she's walking down the corridor with them on a tray. Maybe they could be, Garrick could have made like a Federation, like a Starfleet uniform
design
cocktail dress. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
Had the division collar in there. Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It'd have been much better than a scant.
Yeah, this is something that I want to see right now. Ezri in a Federation Starfleet cocktail dress. So, yeah, this was a lot of fun. You know, I love that they're all so cocky too. You know, Bashir's like, "I'll bet we do it in 5 minutes." You know, and then everything goes wrong,
right,
for them. And this episode, I think, one of the things that we had written down, you know, is this a flawed episode? You know, because your crew isn't in danger. You know, there's no holodeck malfunction. Like, it's going to try and kill us. Does that bother you at all?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. And I've never thought about this episode as being flawed because of that. But some fans have said over the years that they're not, you know, crazy about this episode because there is, no, as I was saying earlier, you know, they could just turn off the program. There's no real danger to anyone here except Vic. And Vic isn't actually flesh and blood, so they could turn him off. And unlike the Doctor on Voyager, he's not senior staff. You know, if they turn Vic off, it's not really going to affect the operations of the station in any way. So, but you know, they said in writing the episode that they didn't want to just do another holodeck / holosuite malfunction program. They just wanted to do a fun episode about our characters caring about Vic, caring about a hologram, and that you didn't need to have that danger element. And personally, I'm glad that they didn't have that danger element. If this had been a case where there was some sort of malfunction and the safeties went off and, you know, Frankie Eyes was going to kill Sisko and Bashir couldn't get him back to the infirmary in time, I would have kind of rolled my eyes and said, you know, how many times are we going to do this in Star Trek? Because Deep Space Nine has done it as well. You know, we've had our man Bashir where there's actually a malfunction and everyone is threatened in that case. And I like the fact that they just did a fun episode and And it plays well into Deep Space Nine, the fact that the motivation for success for our characters is simply the fact that Vic means something to them on a personal level, because so much of Deep Space Nine is all about digging into the relationships between these characters.
And that's something that I really like too. Reading through some things about this episode was, Ira Stephen Bear said that they knew that a lot of fans, there were some fans who didn't like Vic, there were some fans who did. And so one of the ideas, and the reason they specifically wrote Sisko role as a surrogate for fans who didn't accept Vic, and that, you know, by the end of the episode, of course, Sisko does, and kind of hoping that fans would see, look, if Sisko can accept Vic, then you can too. And you can really tell that this is a labor of love for the writers. They just enjoyed writing this story. And I think they enjoyed giving the actors something very fun to do before they knew that the rest of these episodes, these weren't going to be fun episodes. You know, the rest of this is the end of Deep Space Nine. You know, from after this episode to the end is the very long last episode of Deep Space Nine. And there isn't a stopping point. So this is the last time we really see the crew all together and all having a good time. Because after this, you know, Worf gets lost, Ezri goes after him, they're gone from the station for four episodes. The Breen joined the Dominion and Cardassians in the war. Everything just starts to snowball really quickly. And for me, I remember watching this episode originally, and, you know, obviously not knowing what was coming next, I loved this episode. And for me personally, it's because I loved Vic too. And I was glad, like you said, nobody was going to get killed because of a silly holodeck program. But we wanted to save our friend Vic. I wanted to save my friend Vic. So I don't...
That's why you put on a cocktail dress when you were watching the episode, right?
No, I put on a tuxedo, Chris. Not a cocktail dress. I don't look good in cocktail dresses. Nobody wants to see that. So I would never have seen this as a flawed episode. Too much in love with the music of this period to not love Vic and all that they brought to Deep Space Nine through him. So.
And, you know, another question, one of the last questions here about this is, how does it fit into the overall war arc? Because the war has been going on for quite a while at this point. And of course, you know, it comes to a head after this, as you said, with the final episodes. But for me also, I like the fact that there's kind of a break here for the crew. It's easy to watch this and say, why are they doing this? You know, the whole Alpha Quadrant is in danger. There's this war raging. The Federation is losing a war against a brutal, oppressive enemy who will kill, you know, billions of people throughout the Federation if they're successful in winning the war and they take over. Doesn't the crew have more to worry about than what's going on with this hologram? It's easy to think that, but I like the fact that they have this, because I think it also shows that even in the worst circumstances, life goes on. Life has to continue. And even if we're surrounded by very large problems that threaten our way of life, on a personal level, we all have certain basic concerns in our lives. And friendships are important as well. And we can't give all of that up just because something else bigger is happening around us. We have to worry about both. We do have to fight that battle. We do have to preserve our way of life in this respect, the Federation defeating the Dominion. but we also can't let go of what makes us who we are either. And that's what we see in this episode, is that even in the worst of times, you can find something good. You can find moments of joy and fun, and you're always there to help your friends.
Yeah, this is something that, Chris, I really think was important too, because thinking over Band of Brothers and that idea that, you know, these guys every once in a while had to be taken off the front lines so they could spend, you know, a few hours or maybe a day in a town in Europe so they could experience some normalcy. And then they could go back to the front. And, you know, Deep Space Nine is the front lines of this war for a very long time. And so it is very important for these people to have a break, to have something else to talk about. And you know, Sisko's kind of rough attitude at the beginning has more to do with them talking about Vix than it being a holodeck program, or that they're not doing their work. Because I think even he knows these people need a break, and in some ways I think he's more ribbing them for talking about a holodeck program and getting so involved with it than necessarily not doing work. But I completely agree with you. You know, for me, when I watch through Deep Space Nine, or I'm just picking out an episode, this is one of those episodes that's a lot of fun, and it's not just it's not a Ferengi episode. It's the whole crew having a fantastic time, and so I don't mind popping this on Netflix or pulling out my DVDs and watching this one a lot, because I just always enjoy watching it. One, for the music. The music in this episode is fantastic. Just the background orchestrations and the jazz that they play. And two, this is something that I enjoy watching. It's got Esri in a cocktail dress.
Well, it shows that DS9 can do fun as well. Yes. You know, it is a heavy show. I know people like to talk about it as being the dark and gritty Star Trek, but, you know, this shows that this same station, these same characters can also have fun. It's not all about the war. And it works really, really well. Well, do you have any final thoughts, anything that we didn't touch on about this episode that you wanted to mention before we wrap up?
Well, I would just say, if you haven't seen it in a while, just go pull it up on Netflix, or, you know, pop in your DVD and just sit back and have a great time. And be reminded, I think, of just how far these characters have come. And specifically, I think, watch the character of Kira and her attitude towards this, and how she just kind of dives into this to save a hologram. Just, you know, we talked about her when we did our big character study of Kira, and this is one of those key moments where you can see just how far she's come as a character. And this is what makes Deep Space Nine such a joy to be a part of and to watch over and over again, is getting these kind of payoffs when you get to season 7.
Well, I would just say that as you do pull it up on Netflix or pop in your DVD, as you have your drink there, just be careful. If anyone squirts any purple liquid into your drink, I suggest that you get yourself a fresh drink.
Good call, Chris. Good
call. And the last thing, if I were changing the ending of this episode, after having seen William Shatner's The Captain's documentary, I would have preferred to see Sisko playing piano with Vic at the end of this episode instead of singing, because I think that would have just been a complete riot.
Yeah. Of course, I'm not sure if we'd know what he was going to play then.
I don't know if he'd know what he was going to play then.
But yeah, he can definitely play the heck out of the piano, so.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this has been a fun discussion, Matthew. A fun moment here on the Orb. And I'm glad we got to talk about this today. Why don't we tell everyone where to find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on Bada Bing, Bada Bang. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form on that page. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that'll come right to us. You can hop over to our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for Deep Space Nine. There's also one for the orb. And you can chat with us and other listeners about the show. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And if you're on Twitter, you'll find us under username trekfm. And Matthew, what if listeners would like to look you up personally?
Well, if you'd like to follow me, you can do so, one, at Twitter, and MattRushing02, talking about all sorts of things there. Right now, really talking Into Darkness, Star Trek Into Darkness, talking Man of Steel, which I'm super excited about coming out. I already have my tickets for that one, Chris. In fact, I even have the t-shirt. And I was in a comic book store yesterday and got called Superman. I was pretty excited.
I bet.
Yeah, that happened. So, shake and bake. And then, of course, you can find it on Literary Treks as well, where we talk books and comics together. Doing the book reviews. Reviewed Star Trek Into Darkness for the site as well. So, I'm all over the place. Just look me up. Let me know what you want to talk about, and we'll have a great time. But, Chris, if somebody wants to find you and wants to go see Star Trek Into August, where can they find you?
Well, if you'd like to join me in seeing Star Trek Into August, you need to book your plane ticket to Tokyo's Narita Airport. It opens on August 23rd, so if you want to arrive on the 22nd, you know, we can go out, we can have some sake, have some sushi, and catch the movie the next day. But if you want to chat me up, you can find me on Twitter under username C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. And you can find me elsewhere on the network, as Matthew just mentioned, on Literary Treks. And this week, we just recorded our show about the third book in the Deep Space Nine relaunch series, Abyss, which goes back to 2001. We're working our way through that. So, you know, if you're a Niner and you want to join in the conversation about the eighth season of Deep Space Nine, which takes place in the novels, check that out over at trek.fm/LT. And you'll also find me on The Ready Room every week, where we do talk Deep Space Nine, as well as the other four live-action series and movies. Matthew often joins me on there, along with a panel of many other hosts from across Trek FM, as well as other guests from outside and creators from Star Trek. So join us there, trek.fm/TRR. And lastly, if you enjoy The Orb and our other shows, please hop over to iTunes and leave us a review. Leave us a star rating or a written review. We'd love to hear from you. And it helps other people find the show as well.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.